Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Shope and the Bulldog.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody?
Monday, Tuesday, hump day is halfway.
It's Mike Shope.
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
And the Bulldog.
Hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on. I know you can hear me.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
On WGR.
Hump day!
Sports Radio 550.
What now? Do you want to just sigh at the Sabres all day? Or rant at the Sabres all day? Do you really want to? Does anybody really want to listen to that? What do you do? Like, what?
It's a very good question.
What do you do when you're the Pirates, or the way the Chicago Blackhawks were before the boss died, Bill Wirtz, when he died, then his son took over and they came to life a little bit. What do you even do? It's unsatisfying to ignore it. That's kind of like what my instinct is to do, almost out of spite.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't really feel right to do. I do always want to thank any – this was like when the Bills hired Buddy Nix or Dick Geron or the Sabres and Phil Housley. Phil Housley, I think, was the worst of their hires. And, you know, that's a pretty – maybe that's an interesting debate. But you just sort of like – on the air, at least, I want to – and I don't mean this like disingenuously. I want to say that I don't know that it won't work.
Right.
Like, yeah. That's the best I can usually do with them is that – you know, maybe it'll work, but I don't know. Like, I can't really think of worse ideas.
Yeah, well, what stings you at a time like now is you mentioned Housley, and I'm not prepared to debate the statement that he was the worst hire, but thinking back, how much you love the team and how much it means to you, how much you know it means to the community, our audience, and wanting so badly for things to work. Like, I love the Housley idea. I thought Ralph Kruger was going to be a breath of fresh air.
I like that.
How exciting. He's from outside. He's retread? No, forget about Edmonton. This is new.
This is a guy who ran a soccer team.
This is positionless hockey or something. We're going to get like this is going to be incredible.
This is somebody who hid in Buffalo bars.
He's walking around like I do around Allentown, meeting people and talking about the Sabres. Wow.
This guy cares.
Yeah. Oh, he's plugged right in.
Probably did.
He's just tremendous, incredible con job that was. And I feel so burned by it. So, yes, sure, Eric Staal. I mean, you could have chosen Brett Hull, I suppose, but, you know, no, fine.
I know.
You got a relationship with this guy. He'll take your call.
Brad Park wasn't available.
He wants to get in. He wants to get into the business. Okay. He's been around a lot of hockey. There's no denying that. He has won, so he knows what that looks like and smells like and tastes like and all that
so
stuff.
So does Adams.
Yeah, and how's that going? So, I don't know. It's a moment in time here where I want to consider. I combined wanna and to there. It was sloppy. I'd like to consider whether or not they're done adding things.
Ugh.
Like, does this
so done?
Is this the person to come help Adams? I mean, that's sort of what the job description
yes.
is, but it's not.
Of course, it is
someone who's accomplished anything in the league. Like, this is not like. I don't know.
This
is the move?
I think this was Terry Pegula's sort of compromise, like, doesn't want to make changes again, which, you know, you do when you're losing all the time, but, you know, he's sort of maybe tired of that. And we're always talking about credibility. We went long on that late yesterday, like, just what kind of credibility is called for. I never wanted to advocate for the Don Waddells of the world, Rutherford, Lamorello even, with all his winning. Like mm-hmm. I never felt like that needed to be done, but I think they have sunk so low that maybe that is what you have to do, that credibility is so lacking. I don't know. I mean, this wouldn't be true of everybody. Not everybody, not every potential free agent or coaching candidate would think this,
mm-hmm.
but I do think Buffalo would be like a non-starter for a lot of people. Coaches. I mean, I think Ruff is here because he had been here. And that was like fifth all-time in wins. But I don't think you hire him unless you have the tug at the heartstrings
piece. Right. If he had a career as a player and then a long time as coach of the Chicago Blackhawks or the Detroit Red Wings, and that was his, you know, his plaque. He, you know, not that he's in the Hall of Fame, but you get the point. Like, if that's what's on his hockey card, yeah, no. At that stage of his career, he's not coming here to coach the Buffalo Sabres. He's a highly decorated, one of the winningest coaches in the history of the sport. I think you almost have to have some soft spot for the region and the organization to have that career and want to come do this job.
Well, that could go either way, though. I think of it more as, would the Sabres be interested, you know, in somebody like that?
Oh, okay.
That somebody that isn't, I mean, what was Housley? Somebody that isn't sort of, I think, you know, Pegula just gets that totally wrong. And, you know, it's not, if you go back to his first day, it's sort of, the first day he came across as sentimental toward the history of the franchise, and so, like, I guess that's to be expected.
Well, yeah. So, we did talk about this with Paul late yesterday, and we'll talk to Paul around the same time again today, go over this news and whatever happened in the playoffs last night. I've never liked the idea of advocating for Ken Holland or, like, you know, any of the names you just mentioned, right? Mark Bergevin. Like, anybody who's been in the league that might be looking for a new gig, Lou Lamoriello, even though he's 82 or whatever. I've never wanted to, because it's retread city, and, you know, I just said a minute ago, I thought, Ralph Krueger, that's a breath of fresh air. What an exciting change. But that said, the Sabres have pushed me to a point where I would advocate for that because it's something they have not tried. And I got to try, you know, changing out the guys in the same positions isn't working. It hasn't worked for 14 years. So try something you have barely dabbled with and bring someone in that maybe gives you that credibility, also has some voice and intelligence about the game and has managed hockey teams for, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, like some of these guys like Holland and Lou Lamoriello. I'm not against another set of eyes and another set of opinions coming in the door, but having it be someone with zero, and I mean, you cannot emphasize enough, the zero experience here in Eric Staal is just not what's called for at this moment. Now, that again, that doesn't have to doom this. Maybe he'll be the magic touch Svengali and this will all turn out. I don't know, but it's just a weird pivot to offer the job to someone who's going to have to learn how to do it.
And, well, that's what they always do.
And not have, like, if he was interested in this, because some pretty notable former players have taken this route recently. Jason Spezza started, he finished up playing with Toronto and just sort of stayed there and hung out at Dubas' side and I think followed him to Pittsburgh, if I'm not mistaken. But there was, I'm going to get to know how to do this. There was a roll-up before I think he even had an actual title. He was just going to be like, let's just see how this goes and see if you want to pursue something on your end. Like, maybe a position will evolve out of your being here kind of thing. That's one thing. To just install someone with zero experience into the job of special assistant to the GM, it's just not what I think anybody was expecting to happen here. Well, I shouldn't say expecting to happen here. You might have been bracing for something, you know, I don't know, equally unmoving.
I don't think whatever happens is going to mean I'm going to want to blame Eric Staal. Like, I don't even know what he'll do. Maybe they want him around players. I mean, he's had a great career. Maybe they'll want, he played here too. Maybe they'll want him around players. Like, I don't think it has to be a net negative. But what it doesn't do, in my opinion, is give them any semblance of the credibility piece that we talk about that I think they lack. I just don't really think this does that. And I think it's probably meant to do that. I think there's probably an element of, like I said about Pegula, like a compromise piece where, like, he doesn't want to put anybody on top of the organization. The only person, it's either been Kim or Russ Brandon, right? That's ever, or LaFontaine, I guess. Like, there's never been any sort of person above the GM. And, you know, we talked with Paul yesterday and Paul doesn't think they need that. And I respect that. Again, I kind of don't want to buy into that so much either, but it's just that, you know, we just spent a year. What was the biggest topic of the season? It was, you know, the palm trees stuff where the GM told the world that he can't get players here like other teams can. And, like, what an admission. So how do you change that? I mean, you can't move the franchise to Barcelona or something. Like, we're not for that. We're not moving the team. But still, like, somehow you've got to figure out a way. I think they thought they had done it right after Terry bought them. You know, the hockey heaven stuff. Mm-hmm. And we want it to be organic. We want hockey to be in the air. But it's just so stale. And I don't know.
Yeah, that's a long time ago now. I mean, a lot has happened.
I can't name assistant GMs or special assistant. Is this Dwight Schrute? Like, is this assistant to the GM? Or
right.
Like, I can't name these people in other organizations. I don't know what they do. You know, maybe Staal's name is the thing, and he'll come in and just offer an opinion. I don't want to feel like I need, at least, current players or recent players to make personnel decisions. I think that tends to fail in the NHL. I felt more strongly about this 5 to 10 years ago when I just wanted numbers, you know, and I bought the idea that the Sabres were into the numbers recently, but they still haven't just done the right, they haven't made the right moves. You end up with Connor Clifton, you know, instead. And, like,
that was exactly it's just, the guy I thought of.
It just doesn't make sense.
Thinking about this earlier.
It just doesn't make sense.
Right.
You don't get to work here if you've ever had the job before, other than, like, if you're Ruff, who's kind of in a special category, kind of in the legends bracket, you know? And it's just so depressing. The Sabres really are, to me, like one of these small number of franchises in sports that just, you know, you just don't expect them to get it right. And that just makes me want to ignore it. That just, mm-hmm. I just... I don't feel like I can't say they're. It's complicated for me because it's a job and a passion. You know, it's a it's a hobby or a pursuit, and then it's also professional. And I don't know. Like I'm always just stopping myself because who wants to listen to any of this? Who wants to stare at it? Who wants to look at it? It's just too disappointing. It's too upsetting. It's the Pirates.
Yeah.
I mean, no franchise hates its fans more than the Pirates. And they get, and the Sabres are this too. They get lucky with these prodigy prospects and great players, and either like they're just not going to keep them or the players want to leave, you know, and it just goes nowhere. And it just makes it worse. So all of this is with the acknowledgement, the hopeful acknowledgement that, you know, maybe next year will be the year where it comes together. But they make it very hard to buy into it.
Yeah. I feel like there's never been more people in two very distinct camps. And I have no idea the size of these camps, although I would guess that the first one I'm about to mention is smaller. And that's the, like, you don't know it won't work. They did something. Maybe Eric Staal will help them. Well, and honestly, I'll say this. I don't want to put on my, like, fake mean guy voice. Maybe Eric Staal will address what you're talking about, credibility-wise. No, it's not an accomplished team builder. But if he's telling you, hey, you know, this is a good scene here, good room, good community, all that stuff, maybe that is in some way has the potential to offset the palm trees and the taxes reputation that, you know, Kevin Adams only further enhanced by talking the way he talked during the season. So you've got like that camp of fans. And then I think the much larger group is just tell me when something changes, which is a very tough place, like you're talking about professionally, to sense that the fan base is. And again, I don't know this. I mean, I'm not polling everybody that's listening to us. It's impossible. And the people who call or don't call, whatever, inaction or action is not always a clear indicator at all, really. It's just, you know, a few people that call. So I just feel like there's more. I don't know that we can win talking about this, is I think the people you'd want to reach are borderline unreachable right now because they're just kind of like, the Sabres are over there for me, and I don't want to let them hurt me anymore. So I'm just going to, yes, when the games come back, I'll be watching. I'll look in. I want to know what's happening. But as far as trying to get my hopes up about the ninth pick and can they trade it for an established partner for Owen Power, it's been 3 years already with that conversation, and can this front office shakeup yield results, and oh my gosh, I think a lot of that is like a check please moment for a lot of fans. And so I don't know. If I'm going to talk honestly about what I think of all this, I think the only people that are going to really pay attention to it are going to get mad because they are, you know, they're face painted blue and gold permanently or something. And good for you if you're out there and you love the team so much that you are just endlessly optimistic. They have sapped every ounce out of a person in myself who has more motivation than the average person walking around right now to find things to get excited about them and interested in and talk about. And I mean, my tank has been telling me 0 miles left for 2 years.
I'm Tank Sinatra here with my co-host.
Investigators Later.
We host the true crime podcast, Psychopedia.
Available on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Years.
You're not a 0 miles guy. You fill your tank with like 100 miles.
Dude, the last time... I can't segue into this. We I had a harrowing rental car experience 2 trips ago. Listen to me. What a life I'm living here, right?
Harrowing.
All these rental cars. Yeah, it was harrowing. Yeah, I can't. Details right now would be inappropriate, but
really?
At some point, it's a good story.
But you don't like to bring it down to the quick, your gas tank.
No.
I only ever do.
No.
I'm not getting. I have maybe never gotten gas before the light goes on.
Wow.
Why would I get gas before the light goes on? Why would you do that?
It's because you have time, and you can avoid having to do it when you don't have time. and you're never going to be caught in a situation where, say, people drive your car for a while and you're not aware of it, and you thought there was enough gas to get to the airport and back, and then you find out that there's not, and it's midnight and you're in Puerto Rico.
Okay.
And so you get your family members to the airport, but your wife and yourself then have to drive back to the house because you're staying another day, and you're looking for gas stations, and the internet is in and out, the cell signal is sketchy, and the first directions that tell you to go to a gas station ends up at a dead end in like an industrial waste zone. Mm-hmm. So you start following directions to another, and the miles are ticking down from 21 to 15, and you're wandering 15. Around Puerto Rico looking for a gas station. You find one, but you have to sign up for an app to get the gas at the pump. You try to go into the store, and the door's locked. There's people in there. It looks like there's an argument, maybe even a robbery. I don't know. You get back in the car. You still can't find a gas station. I found out what my hell on earth is. And look, I lead a pretty easy, you know, conflict-free life. You want to give me all the anxiety at once? Put me in that situation.
I can't wait till you get around to the details.
My wife at one point had to tell, she said, you need to pull over right now and calm down. Hmm. And I listened.
But you turned the car off so no more gas would.
There was another wrong turn, but then there was a gas station and we got gas. But that is my version of hell. That is not a more stressful situation because I feel responsible. Even though I'm not the one who ran the tank out, I should have noticed sooner. I should have got gas. I'm the man. That absolutely ruins me. Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Why did I bring this up? You mentioned gas tanks.
Yes, my gas tank right now is empty. Yes, you're running it down to zero.
You're in Puerto Rico, and all the stores are closed.
You're a daredevil,
and you're on the shoulder,
right?
And you've got no move.
Hell, and it's midnight.
And it's midnight.
I don't know what where anything is. Terrible. That's kind of really the feeling
Bring
I
it
had
back. Bring it
at
back.
That moment in the car when my wife told me you got to pull over. In my worst moments, that's how exasperated I feel about the Sabres. There, I can connect it. The amount of anxiety I have about how I feel like they are just so stuck makes me insane.
What is the owner's thinking? What really is it? I don't want to spend. Only want to spend so much. It's relationships, right? It's people. Which I can respect on a certain level. But it's still a professional sports team, right? Just sort of, I'm comfortable with these people, and I trust them, and, I really don't have any personal accountability here. I'm not really in the public spotlight at all. I don't know. How much criticism does he think he gets? Because the Bills make that tougher.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I don't understand why. It's just super tone deaf.
Yeah.
All of it. Hiring Adams in the first place was this. Just, your team is closing in on a record-long playoff drought, and you're going to hire somebody that, has just completely never been in that kind of job before because, he's around? I mean, it's just super tone-deaf. And for years now, it's been kind of this where, whether it was before Lindy especially, but just, it's just, how do you take him seriously? And they've had good or even great players in this whole time, since 10 years ago. And we've been over that enough times. I don't know. It seems so easy for all the other teams
to bring in
these guys that have just okay, I get it. You've won before. Sure. I don't think you really know more than I do, but I can appreciate your value in the, job environment, and I guess I can't complain. But the Sabres don't even do that. They just can't be bothered to lift up to that kind of level. And it's just so unusual in sports. Even other Sabres teams from the past would do that. I think that's true. I don't know.
I really wonder. I don't know how long or how interesting it is to sit with that question. What is he hoping to accomplish? Today's you run a pro sports team and you know where you are on your timeline. You're as maybe as bad off as you could possibly be considering the circumstances. And it's an off season and it's time to do something. And you're gonna make an announcement.
You're gonna wait a month. And then make an announcement.
Like what? Yeah. What are you hoping for? Are you just hoping to not get killed over it?
Yeah.
Like is that the primary? Let's announce something that won't just get us shredded.
What even is that though?
I don't know.
What is shredded? What is the value of that? What reason? I'm not saying you're wrong. What reason would he have to want to avoid that? I mean, what hasn't been said already?
Right.
This time?
I just don't know like what you think you're going to accomplish by doing this. I guess I just have to hope that someone over there really believes, because I don't know how they could possibly know it, that this is going to help. And the rest is just noise. We got another guy, he's experienced, he's got eyes, he knows players, he knows how the league works. That'll be an asset for us. And that's the end of it.
It's Appert, too. Like, who is Seth Appert? Why is he important? I had a terrible power play. I bring in Lindy Ruff with the same staff, and I have a terrible power play, and it gets me killed again. Like, what? How hard would it be as an owner to just sort of do something about that? Like, how can you just settle for that? Yeah. Well, hi.
That's right. That's the other piece of news today, right, is that reportedly he's being
promoted. Had to do that, I guess.
Absolutely, promotions are deserved.
The team got worse and continues to just be nowhere, and like, yeah, let's just bring him up. Okay. Sal Capaccio at 4. We'll do some football here, because if we don't, it'll just kill us. 803-0550, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
Here's a major problem. Uncatchable targets. Among the 41 NFL tight ends with at least 200 routes run in 2024, only 69% of Kincaid's targets were catchable, the lowest in the league. When targeted 10 or more yards down the field, Kincaid's catchable target rate was 37%. Him and Josh Allen got to get on the same page and establish that chemistry so that way they can maximize on Kincaid getting open, which he is at a high, high clip relative to NFL tight end.
Joe Marino this morning on WGR, kind of baffling, this reality about Dalton Kincaid last season, but I'm not here to dispute it, just sort of weird.
Yeah, I happened to hear that this morning and texted Zach and said, like, grab that. I think that's interesting. I think we've known all of that information, but just hearing it all spit out in, you know, one paragraph was pretty impressive. Like, he Kincaid was available and rated very highly, comparatively speaking, to other tight ends with a similar workload, and just the hit rate was just not good at all. So, like Joe says there, the two of them need to figure that out.
I'm not super optimistic about Kincaid or Coleman. I might be swayed somewhat by my fantasy community, because whenever, like, on ADP Chasing, which I host Tuesday mornings each week, whenever Kincaid or Coleman come up, people laugh. Like, it's not a serious idea. Kind of maybe what, in Kincaid's case, like what he was as the first tight end picked in his draft. And there are lots of vocal Bills fans in fantasy that I think maybe spur that on, that sort of reaction on. I don't know. He's old for his experience, Kincaid. Like, he'll be 26, I think, October. And so for his, like, you know, 2 years into his career, wanting him to get stronger, like being talked about, point of attack stuff. Is that the wrong way to put it? Like, just getting off his coverage.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's more that, I think, than point of attack and blocking stuff.
Yeah,
I think,
right.
Like, Bean, I think, tried to clarify some of that when he was making the rounds last week. I think maybe even including here, once, you know, everything from the outset of that kind of had died down and passed, that, yeah, it's more just you know, giving you more strength to like handle the people covering you and fight through that and be more durable, as opposed to like, you know, we're trying to turn him into Lee Smith or something, which would,
yeah, don't.
Yeah, that's obviously an exaggeration, but so yeah, I mean, I'm really curious to see what happened, because those are the two guys that to me have the most to prove here, with like being choosing to ratchet up the attention on the pass catchers on the team and believing in him as he does, then he's on the line and they're on the line. They better come through, or somebody better. Josh Palmer better smash in a way that not many people at all are predicting, or something is going to have to happen here. Other than Khalil Shakir catching, you know, 80 some passes, you know, probably. Although again, didn't happen last year, and to Bean's point from last Monday, 30 points a game. I mean, they got there without that happening. But that does also include a season where they pivoted to bring in an established guy, and that guy still, to me, has not really been adequately replaced, unless you think that's Palmer.
What's a good year from Kincaid? Like, his rookie year 2 years ago, yesterday, I think it was, we were talking about the Bills, or maybe the day before, and like, what did we talk about 2 years ago when Diggs was on the team and there wasn't this whole drama and, you know, arguing about wide receiver? What did we talk about? One thing we talked about 2 years ago, this is right after the draft now, was what a good year for Kincaid is. And I was having fun with that because he could have had what sounded like sort of a normal, okay kind of season, but it would have been up there as like an all-time great year for a rookie tight end. And that's kind of how it went.
Yep.
73 for 673 and two. Nothing spectacular. Not even close to like what Bowers just did or what Laporta did that year, but not terrible. Four catches a game, right? 40 yards, two touchdowns for the season. Nothing special except for his being a rookie tight end. Then last year he missed time, and I'll accept that he played through an injury also, but those numbers came down more. And like, is his rookie season for this year, with all the different, quote, mouths to feed, is his rookie season good now at this point? 70 for 670 again? Like, is that, we would take that from Kincaid? Because again, it's not great,
yeah,
but I think I probably would.
I almost would be willing to pull back, not that 73 is some incredible number of receptions, but if I got more dynamic plays, if I got more points, more scores, more touchdowns, use the word touchdowns. You're talking about football. It's not that hard.
What about a rouge?
Then I might take, you know, 60 catches, but give me 7 or 8 touchdowns. And I think like that in an everybody eats model, you know, assuming other guys are sort of pulling their weight to the extent that they did last year if they were here, and that Palmer sort of fits in and, you know, gets you 50 catches too or something, then maybe that can work. But I need more impact plays, right? Just so if you want to get him to 80 catches, that's great. But I better be getting to, you know, 5 touchdowns, 6, 7, 8. Like, I need that number to climb. And, you know, that was obviously missing still last year. He had 2 touchdowns again last season, just like he did in his rookie year. So it's more what kind of plays am I getting is what I'd be looking for out of Kincaid than just sheer production. So, like, I could settle for, you know, less than the market rate for top-tier tight ends. Just, you know, catch some third down passes, catch some touchdowns, get in the end zone. I think that would be very much welcomed at this point.
I remember one of his 2 touchdowns last year being in the Jacksonville Monday night game, which was a great Allen play, kind of a broken play, and Kincaid is running to his right toward the corner in the back of the end zone, and Allen finds him. It's a good catch. I mean, that was not a sitter. I don't remember the other one. But I could look it up, I guess. I don't know if I want to, though.
I don't care.
Who really cares?
I don't care if you do.
Is anybody
honestly
wanting to know that? Is anybody in their car right now? Like, please find out.
I don't remember it either, and I'm definitely not going to go look for it.
He doesn't really seem to be getting a ton of respect. In fantasy, he is tight end 15. This is the first drafted 2 years ago. This is when you're supposed to hit. This is when McBride hit, right? Like end of his second year. They had Ertz on the team, kind of like their Knox, different styles of players. But he was kind of blocked. And late second season, he took off. And now he's the highest paid tight end in history. He's tight end too. But the respect is not there for Kincaid. He goes behind Jake Ferguson.
No. Well, it doesn't belong there. You know, like I don't know how high, you know, independent of fantasy draft status. I mean, I don't know if I'm talking about the tight ends in the league. I mean, and that is certainly a way to do it. I don't think he belongs much more than in the like around the midpoint. He just hasn't done it. You gotta give me something to bank on. And you know, the 73 catches in that first year, that's not nothing. I mean, that's still, yeah, it's an incredible number of receptions for a rookie tight end. But the position is evolving, and more is being expected, and teams are getting more from guys like that. And with his athletic profile and the opportunity that exists on this team, yeah, if it doesn't, you don't get some improvement really all across the board. Touchdowns, again, receptions, scale back, but just give me bigger plays, yards per, you know, reception, something that indicates like, okay, they found a way to make this really have some value. It's got to happen this year. I mean, it's year three.
Do you have any interest in Davis?
Barely. I don't know who I would want to put him on the field in front of now on this team. Because, the reason I never wanted the Bills to commit to him in the first place is I just didn't think there was enough there to warrant him being, like, you know, a second contract number two wide receiver on a team of this caliber. So I was happy when they turned their back on that. And I'm, you know, I know it, I would expect it to be very inexpensive to do now. But I don't know that I'm really helping myself by doing it.
Yeah, I think I'm probably done. Maybe I'm with you. Just like, explain it to me first. But because I do think people got too far down on him. I don't know what happened in Jacksonville. Liam Cohen took that job and was immediately like done with Davis. He had a press conference. He was the Tampa Bay offensive coordinator last year. He had a press conference and went long on his wide receivers, never even mentioned Davis. Like, he wasn't even on the team. Now he isn't. If you didn't know, that's why we bring it up, because he was released. He came at a pretty bad cap penalty too for right. Jacksonville. Like they decided to have to eat that and let him go. So
yeah, like $11 million guaranteed for this year. And my understanding is that there's offset language there. So you know, if you were interested in signing him, I would imagine he's not looking for some huge payday, because whatever, he's gonna get $11 million basically, no matter what. Right. If he signs with the Bears for $2 million a year, then he gets $9 million from Jacksonville. If he doesn't sign anywhere, he gets 11. You know, so he doesn't have to make a killing with this contract, you know, unless somebody wants to do it. But I don't know why they would.
Right. Sal coming up at 4. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. WGR. Welcome back. We'll talk to Sal in about 15 minutes. Friday, Josh Byrne. So that's 5:30 on Friday will be Josh Byrne.
All right.
For the Bandits in their finals series coming up. Tomorrow, Greg Wyshynski. Here's Brian with us. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, guys. Quickly to the Sabres, your first segment there. I mean, I'm surprised they did anything, to be honest with you. When Kevin Adams spoke at the season end, he talked about not making any quick movements. You can't just make a move to make a move. He said things like development is nonlinear. He kind of went back to that, which is kind of, I've heard other press conferences where that's what bad teams say. You know, they try to extend that timeline, buy themselves time. Well, you know, so he said that. And then it kind of like, it reminds me of his you know, his midseason at the crisis point where he had a similar press conference, and he talked about you know, Josh Allen and how he became the savior of the Bills. And I just wondered if that's kind of like the plan for the Sabres, that they're hesitant to do major roster surgery. Can they get players? I don't know about that. Do they have an internal cap? I don't know about that either. But are they kind of just waiting for, like, their superstar to come in and kind of save the team? And then quickly on Kincaid, I just think he has a modest athletic profile. I mean, he didn't run at the combine. So, yeah, I don't really know what his vertical is, his 40 is. He doesn't look like an athletic mismatch out there. And it's, to me, you're trying to squeeze efficiency out of an okay athlete. There's nothing dynamic about him.
I don't dispute that eyeball look at him, but a part of the clip that we played from Joe Marino, who was a guest on the morning show today, indicates that he is doing the things needed to make himself available at a very high rate compared to his peers within the league. It just has not gotten off the ground yet. So whatever he might be lacking athletically to your eyes or even mine, it's working. Like, his end of that is working. The hookup has been erratic, and I don't think that they've really gone as hard at making it work, you know, like making him a focus or something. I guess maybe they don't want to do that with anyone. So I don't know, but I think, you know, the Sabres stuff, it's right. They could be waiting to hire, you know, they're talking to all these other candidates. I would question why you needed to get Eric Staal's name out there today then. Like, if you've got something else cooking, which, you know, that's a part of the Friedman reporting, is that they've done this today, but they're still looking for this other guy. I don't know, man. I don't think you needed to hurry out Eric Staal's name out there if you've got a bigger name coming in on top of Kevin Adams. Just wait and roll it all out together. But, you know, maybe they'll still land that guy. I don't know.
Sal, will he have any schedule news? It's a week now.
I don't know. That's right. We are a week out.
I mean, I doubt he's sitting on it if he's got any.
Yeah.
I did start a new mock schedule.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Mock.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah. What we got there? Miami opener, Jets, the Jets closer. Oh, you got 1 o'clock next to Miami there.
I do. Yes.
I like that. All right.
And I don't have a time for the Jets because that's to be determined.
Right. That
week 18.
That game will not have a time on it. Because if they're competing for the AFC East in week 18, you know, Sunday Night Football, we may want to move that game.
Nobody's week 18 kickoff times are announced when the schedule comes out. If somebody's mock schedule has a time for week 18, you know it's amateur.
Oh, they don't know what they're doing.
You know that they're an amateur.
They've not run wild in the streets of Schedulville if they're doing that.
Home and week one and week 18, opener and finale, both home games in the AFC East. Could that happen?
Sure.
It probably has. That could happen.
Sure.
I'm thinking of the stadium for that.
Yes. I like the Jets as the closer because I think when we talked about this last week, we confirmed that the Jets were the first regular season game in the stadium. So close it out that way. That symmetry works for me in the way my brain works. That feels right to me, even though I don't remember that game from 1973.
That's interesting to me. Why wouldn't you? You remember a preseason game from that year, right?
Well, I just remember because I had a picture of Wallace Francis in a scrapbook catching the ball that he was about to return for a touchdown on, I think, the opening kickoff of a preseason game in the stadium.
The first game.
So that I remember that. I don't remember what the Bills did in 73 against the Jets in the opener.
This was week three. Their home opener, first regular season game in the stadium, was week three. They beat the Jets 9-7. They had a 9-0 lead on 3 field goals and held on. The Jets were a 5.5-point favorite, according to Pro Football Reference, even though they were only 1-1. Both teams were 1-1. Joe Ferguson lit it up that day. 7-for-17, 74 yards and a pick. He was only sacked once.
How many yards did OJ go for on his way to 2003?
123.
Eh.
That's right. That was that season.
Right.
Probably one of his worst games.
Right. It's not that great for that year.
And they end with the Jets that year. That's the famous one where
he goes over
2,000.
Yep.
What else here? Nothing else. Nothing else is that interesting.
All right.
John Riggins, 12-for-43 on the ground.
Closer up.
For the Jets. We will talk to Sal next. Gabe Davis, the George Pickens trade. Wide receiver won't leave us alone. It's not my fault today.
Pickens and Davis are like the two big stories. It's not my fault today. 803-0550, Sal after sports here on WGR.